It's another edition of the Falls Cast brought to you by the Falls Free Press in beautiful Cuyahoga Falls, Ohio, where today, Sunday, January 23rd, it is snowing again and 20s. So there you go. Better get their shovels ready again.
Hope everyone appreciates the color white and gray and all the shades of white and gray.
My daughter called to me from the other room and said, "Dad, it's snowing again." And I thought, like, oh, maybe we got like a dusting, look outside. No, there's like 3 more inches on the ground already. Yay.
Yeah. Get out the snowblower.
It is a very fluffy light snow, though.
It does seem, yeah.
They say for shoveling, don't shovel, push. You push it. So get out there when it's only a few inches and push it around.
Yeah.
Don't heave ho.
Well, there are certain shovels are designed
for pushing,
and certain are designed for scooping.
Yeah, that's so true. Use the right tool.
My neighbor had one called a man plow. It was like a giant snow shovel. It had like 2 handles, and he would just like walk behind it. And he was this huge, like 6'6" guy too. So it was just hilarious to see him out there with this thing.
Plowing his own driveway.
Yeah. All right. Well, manpower. There you go.
Exactly. We are here with some of our favorite Falls casters, including our friend Kathy McMenemy.
Hello.
And of course, the Mules, Stephen and Jen.
Hello.
Howdy doodly doo.
And it's a little bit of a light roundtable today, but our sole other podcaster, Fallscaster today, is myself, Alex Hall. Thanks for joining us. We do not have an interview for this episode, but we are going to be looking around for some interesting new folks to speak with. If you have any ideas, you always feel free to reach out to us at fallsfreepress@gmail.com if you would like to see us interview somebody in particular, and we will try to make that happen for you. Also, we continue to encourage our readers/listeners to shop local, so please keep your money in the Falls. What businesses have you guys patronized this week? Kathy, how about you?
Honestly, I don't think I did anything this week.
Well, we were sort of stuck in our houses, I guess.
Right. Other than the neighbor, yeah, I gave them $30 to do my driveway.
Okay, that's local.
I supported local that way.
Mules.
We didn't go anywhere. Yesterday we got a Moe's family carryout meal. It was nice. Kielbasa and pierogies and stuffed cabbage, the salad and bread.
It was good.
Yeah, take home and heat it up, and there you go.
Now, so was that economical?
I think it was $40.
$45.
$45.
Yeah. It's like a family meal.
Family meal for four.
That's
so
great.
Really $10 a person.
Yeah, and Moe's is really, really good food too. So
it was good. It was very homey style.
Yeah, I think she does a special. She used to do it more often when they had the full shutdown, but now I think she's doing one or two a week now. She offers those little family meals.
I see the pictures on Facebook, and then I'm like, oh man, yeah. Mm-hmm. So
usually for the weekend, sometimes Taco Tuesday she does too.
Oh, nice.
Taco kit. Yeah. So it's affordable for a family of four.
Right on. Well, my daughter is still playing soccer every weekend, so usually after soccer we do something, and this week we went to Jubilee Donuts on Front Street there by Acme, and we got a orange juice donut, which I had never heard of before. It was pretty good. It was like a donut that must have been infused with what do they call that stuff on the outside of the orange? Not the rind, but the like stuff that you like have
zest.
Yeah, the zest. I think they must have had the zest in it or something.
Did it have a creamy filling or?
No, it's just a cake donut.
Oh, okay. Well, you would think with a name like that, it would have something nice in the middle.
No, it's just
or be juicy.
Juicy and creamy filling.
Oh boy.
It was just a cake donut with like orange flavor, and it was glazed. It was pretty good. It wasn't super orangey. It wasn't like what I quite expected, but it was good. And we
come on. And it was glazed.
It was glazed. Steve is taking the place of Mike in today's episode.
Yeah, he's going to pump it up for it to be twice as naughty.
Well, you know, those are big shoes to fill, man. I got to try.
Oh, please. You're the original big shoes.
The girls both wanted like cake donuts with like chocolate glaze and sprinkles. And I always go for the Long John, which is like I feel like it's the most disgusting donut you can get.
Steve can't get over it. Long John.
It's the Long John, yeah.
What is that? Is that like an eclair?
It's like the, yeah, basically it's like a rectangular shape with like, you know, frosting on top and like cream in the middle. Cream. Go ahead, center. Steve.
Nice. I like those. I didn't know they were called long johns. Oh, appropriately named.
Yeah.
Carry on.
We also went to Grandpa Joe's after my daughter's piano lesson at Falls Music School. So.
And pumping up on the sugar, Alex.
Yeah, I know. Well, but these were different days. It wasn't like we did this all in one day.
Oh, okay. One treat for one lady, right. And another, yeah, treat for another. Got it.
Lainey had her piano lesson at Falls Music School, also a nice local business. And afterwards picked out some candy at Grandpa Joe's. She got like, it's like a, they're like, there's a lot of interesting little candies at Grandpa Joe's, but this was like a lollipop that was inside of a toy that was like a little like accordion thing that had a shark mouth on the end that when you pushed a button it would like come up and like, you know, pinch. So she was very amused with that. Her sister had gotten one for Christmas one time, I think, and she like really wanted one, so she got one. And then we got some toffee from their like, you know, case. You can like order per piece or whatever, and that was really good. And then the other place we went was Tim's Pizza. Hadn't been to Tim's in a really long time. I like Tim's because the sauce is not super sweet. It's a bit more of a savory pizza. The crust is like, it feels like homemade. They even like crimp the edges. It's like, it's pretty cute, you know.
Is that what you had? You guys had pizza?
I got a pizza. My daughter got a pizza. My other daughter got cavatelli, which was very good. I love cavatelli. Yeah.
It was, and they did a good job with it.
Yeah, it was good. I mean, the sauce is good there. I don't know if they make their own sauce, but I feel like to be an Italian restaurant in Cuyahoga Falls, you better damn well make your own sauce.
Well, yeah.
So yeah, if they do or not is another story. Yeah. Did you guys eat inside or carry out?
Oh, carry out. Yeah. I'm not going to eat in that place. It was apparently, my mother actually picked it up before she came to our house for dinner. And I just had like placed the order. She said it was apparently like jumping in there. She couldn't even find parking hardly. And it's not the greatest spot for parking because it's at that five corners there.
It's on a corner. Bailey. Yeah. It's on a big corner. Yep.
So it wasn't great as far as that went, but we got a bunch of stuff. She wanted onion rings. So we got onion rings. Their onion rings were fine. I mean, you know, it's probably pulled out of a bag and thrown in a fryer, but they were good. Calamari did not seem, you know, like hand prepared and breaded. It wasn't actually. The texture was good.
Awesome.
And then salads, and I think they might make some of their own dressings. I would say for like middle of the road local Italian cuisine, it was pretty good. You know, I'm sure some of it is, like I said, you know, pulled out of a bag and thrown in the fryer, and some of it's homemade. But we were satisfied.
I thought he was famous for like his big meatballs. It's like not on the menu, but it's on the menu. It's like a thing. I read that somewhere.
Tim's meatballs?
Yeah.
I know.
It's like, how is all this coming out of your mouth without jokes?
I think I've seen something on Facebook about it.
Yeah, Tim's special, and then it was, he's got these just two big meatballs. He hand makes them and puts sauce.
Maybe it was in a talk of the town, best Italian restaurant, and then people were going on.
Well, so the guy. The guy Chuck, who is a moderator of Talk of the Town, used to talk a lot about the Chuck's meatball casserole, and he would always say, "Ask for it by name."
We've had this conversation before.
Yeah.
Now it's all coming back because we haven't had Tim's yet.
I think Chuck just really wanted to, like, you know, sell himself as like the guy who came up with this. I don't really know what the story behind it is. Maybe we could ask Chuck. But anyway, yeah, they do have like a meatball casserole.
That would be an interview.
Thing.
Interview the Talk of the Town admin. Yeah. Oh my God.
Yeah,
I suppose we could ask him.
I'm not doing that one.
Okay, well, yeah, like we say, keep your dollars local. Lots of good stuff to support, including all these businesses we mentioned, but so many others. Also, if you haven't been checking out fallsfreepress.com lately, you have been missing out on this comprehensive, unfiltered coverage of the weekly city council meetings that we've been publishing. This is a really good way to see what's going on in council meetings without the added agenda of a national news conglomerate. The city council minutes report usually hits the site within a day or two of the meeting taking place, so check it out each week on Tuesday or Wednesday so you can get a really detailed kind of roundup of what happened on city council that week. And also, please keep sending us your feedback to tell us what you think of the show. You can do that by sending your comments to falsefreepress@gmail.com or on Facebook at facebook.com/falsefreepress or by reviewing us on whatever podcast catcher you use to listen. whether it's Apple Podcasts, Spotify, etc. This is your chance to tell Suzanne what you really think about the Bart's Arch theme song. And she's not here to protest that statement. So
could be inviting the next new wave of making a new song.
Yeah. Okay.
Replacing the old standby if no one's here to defend it.
Oh man.
Oh man.
Those are fighting words right there.
Yeah, here we go. Because if no one's saying I hate Alex, I'll just stir up another pot.
Also, Kathy pointed out to us before the show that she had read about a national blood shortage. Kathy, do you have anything to say about that?
Yeah, just from their the website, the Red Cross website, it says it's the worst blood shortage in over a decade.
My goodness.
So you can search their website to find a local blood drive to donate.
Yeah, I know they're still getting blood. One of my coworkers was I think she came during the big snowstorm on Monday because she had an appointment to donate, and then she like got to work, and then the Red Cross is like, well, you know, it's your appointment's going to be delayed a few hours, and they tried to cancel it, but she's like, I'm here, and she did get to donate. So they'll do it even in extreme weather conditions. So get out there and volunteer.
I am such a colossal coward when it comes to needles and blood. Like, even when it's just like a test. Ugh.
The last time I donated, I almost passed out, and that kind of scared me a little bit. I'd never had a problem before. You know, I've done it since high school, but yeah, like right before I got married, it was like, man.
I've been stuck a lot for a lot of different reasons with needles, and I'm for tests and shit, and I'm good. I don't want that. I don't need one experience that on purpose.
Yeah.
Well, if you are willing to give blood, it's a good time to do it because there's a national blood shortage and apparently a historic one. So get out there and give some blood if you can. And finally, please get vaccinated and wear a mask. COVID-19 is still very much here, and our vigilance with physical distancing, mask wearing, and vaccination is the only thing that's going to help. We heard this week that Meatloaf, the singer, died apparently from COVID. There was some question about whether he was vaccinated or he was like anti-mandate. I don't know the facts, so this is all just sort of like me talking. We're just talking here. You know, there's other famous people who died of COVID-19. That big guy in Friday with the kind of funny eye, Tommy Lister, John Prine, the great folk musician, Ellis Marsalis, the great jazz pianist, Adam Schlesinger, the guy from the band Fountains of Wayne, the country singer Joe Diffie, Roy Horn, who was one half of Siegfried and Roy, Colin Powell, Herman Cain, all kinds of like well-known people in politics and entertainment who have died from the coronavirus. You know, so not just Meatloaf. People are dying from this thing still. It is still very much here. And I gotta say, I haven't really been paying as much attention to like numbers and stuff. Jen, I feel like you probably are. Do you know what's happening out there right now?
They're still really high. Like they're higher than the spike back in last December with Delta. They're falling. So they do think that we're gonna peak and plateau out in the next several weeks. Cleveland Clinic still has their surgeries canceled through January 30th. Anything that's non-essential or life-saving. And numbers are still high, but they're falling. Like 2-3 weeks ago, there were like 3,500 Cleveland Clinic employees out with COVID. And then like a week or two later, 1,000 people came back, and now the numbers are falling. So cases are definitely going down, but they're still really high. And I know, you know, it's kind of that way across the whole country too. We were getting hot spots, so I don't know. I think we're still in for a rocky ride for many weeks, but hopefully we're going to get past it and there won't be a new nasty variant. Omicron seems pretty decent, you know, benign, if you can go that far.
I wouldn't. I mean, it's...
It's benign for most people.
Yeah, benign for COVID.
If you've been vaccinated.
Yes, if you've been vaccinated.
Yeah, but... So...
Well, keep wearing those masks, people, and we're going to get through
get
this
thing
eventually.
Get boosted if you haven't been boosted, yeah.
Yeah. Okay, on to our roundtable discussion then. This week's city council meeting was a committee meeting, which allows committee members to report out to council in public on matters that will be brought before council for a vote. The finance committee was set to discuss legislation that would allow the mayor to buy a property up on Cochran Road, but the meeting didn't have a quorum of finance committee members, so it'll be discussed at a later date. The discussion of Cochran Road brings to mind the conversations we have had with Community Development Director Diana Colavecchio, who told us in October 2020 that the city would like to widen Cochran Road and put in sewers, etc., in order to allow for the building of an industrial complex on that industrial land. So we don't have any details about an end user who might want to build a complex, but the city seems to be taking steps to prepare the area for industrial development. You guys are familiar with that area, Cochran Road?
A little bit, not you know.
I know where it's at.
Yeah,
I know where the road's at. That's about it.
Same.
Yeah, she had said.
Cochran Garden Center.
Yes, that's what I always think of to remember kind of where that is. It's close, sort of to like the testing site for your car. You know, the environmental testing site for your car.
Yeah.
The e-check, whatever. It's pretty close to there.
Post office is over there too.
Yeah, it's up that direction, and you know. Colavecchio had said to us that at the time that what they had wanted to do was make the street more accessible for someone to be able to come in and build some industrial development, like an industrial complex or whatever that might be. I think this must be sort of like movement in that direction. I don't know if they have a specific like person in mind or a company in mind who actually does want to move here. But it stands to reason they very well may have somebody in mind if they're willing to, you know, buy up the property to be able to make those improvements. So
I think it's smart to invest in infrastructure, and maybe we're going to be getting some funding from, the infrastructure bill that passed this last year. So, it's already zoned for industrial. I would like to know if they're thinking about who they could invite or, you know, what size business or industry that could be supported, because now we have the news from Columbus, right, that Intel is going to be breaking ground and having a gigantic chip manufacturing plant down there in the Columbus area.
The largest in the world.
Yeah. So, yeah, let's prepare for some industry here. Congo Falls ain't tiny, so we need a little piece of the pie.
Well, and you look at, like, you know, having, like, something like Purell up here, you know, and the amount of jobs that you know, are available there in this city. To have another Purell, you know, something that big or bigger in Cuyahoga Falls would be just a ton of jobs and really great for the city.
It would be nice, especially, you know, we lost the bread factory. What's the name of that? Schwabel's. And, you know, several years ago, it would be nice to have some factory.
Yeah.
Jobs, well, back.
It does seem as though maybe they're moving in that direction, and they, I guess, we'll discuss that more coming up pretty soon. Speaking of Diana Colavecchio, it was she who provided some discussion during the Public Affairs Committee's report on the resolution recognizing Cuyahoga Falls as a gateway to the Cuyahoga Falls National Park. Now that the Merriman Valley Schumacher Area Master Plan draft is out, the city wants to encourage residents to review the document and take the survey to give feedback, and you can do that online. We'll post the link maybe in the when we share this episode on Facebook, but it's just a Google form, and you go there and you can take the survey that way. Dr. William Shaheen also spoke on behalf of the Preserve the Valley group, which apparently has over 10,000 members online. And I did not know that. He spoke in favor of the resolution and hoped that it would result in rezoning that would encourage redevelopment, preservation of green space, and stewardship of natural resources. You can actually read the full report on the City Council Minutes report at falsfreepress.com. Meaning by the full report on our website, I mean the full report of what was said during this bit of City Council meeting on Monday. But this resolution is going to come out for a full vote on January 24th, which is tomorrow. We're recording on January 23rd. So they'll be able to pass that resolution, I think, pretty easily. And, you know, hopefully continue to make progress on this plan to make the Valley a better place in regards to being so close to the park. So what do you guys think?
Yeah, I hope they keep pushing forward. It's just, you know, a lot of people have had their say, and we've seen a lot of the ideas and the proposals. So let's make it happen.
As far as like a lot of people, when they come, people who like to camp and to like to go see the national parks. I mean, they're usually outdoorsy, and I think as a travel destination, it'd be great if there's some lodges around here, kind of like Hocking Hills-esque.
Yeah, totally. You know,
places where they can. Groups of people can get together as friends, and they rent the house, and like a really a tourist season, like Hocking Hills has, because I think some of our park system can, you know, taken as a whole, there's a lot of stuff to enjoy.
Yeah, a lot of different diverse features.
The Cuyahoga River on top of that, when the dam finally comes down, it'll be a destination spot, you know, nationally for kayakers.
Yeah,
and
people can do inner tubing now.
Yes.
Even from Kent all the way down.
Yeah. And it's free, so, you know, you're free as long as you bring your own inner tube.
Yeah. But I think they should, hopefully get a quick
support system for the future tourism that it's going to build over time.
Yeah. My forward thinking.
Yeah. I mean, I think I'm really excited about that. I did look at the report, and I just think that, you know, there's been a lot of really good thought put into that. And, I mean, who knows what's going to actually happen? It's going to take years, but I'm glad that we're having the conversation. We have about 50,000 people in Cuyahoga Falls. There's about 200,000 in Akron. So between the two cities, there's a lot of interest. There's a lot of stakeholders, you know. And I think that what you're saying about Hocking Hills is right on the money. And that's one thing I haven't really heard about. And I don't know if it's in the report and I just missed it or what, but I do think that. And maybe that's something for the parks too. I don't really know, but like I know a lot of people who go to Hocking Hills just because they can get a cabin and like drink and do whatever at night, but like during the day go on the trails. Yeah.
Sure.
So I think that that's definitely something if it hasn't been discussed, it should be, you know.
Yeah, I think our area has a potential to be that. We have a lot to offer. Well,
yeah.
And I think particularly the draw of the river is going to have to play a part of that as the big selling part. I mean, when the final dam comes on, I keep harping on this, but I really do believe that it's going to alter this area permanently for the better. It's going to become a tourist attraction, a big one.
Well, that brings in dollars and investments.
And then imagine all the support industry, small businesses and
to come.
River cruises. And
we have a lot to offer already.
Photographers on the edge and they're taking pictures of you going down the river. And like there's, you know, I can just see it. I mean, well, maybe it'll be annoying.
I don't know. Traffic's already pretty heavy, but
it could be annoying to us
locals. Valley area. Maybe we're far enough away on the, you know, periphery that we'll get the business bump, but we're not going to get all the heavy deluge of the traffic and stuff.
I think if you add the support here in downtown Falls, people who want to stay at a nice hotel, you know, Sheraton's going to be booked all the time because it's just perfect. It really is.
Yeah.
I mean, right, I can imagine there being not enough hotel spaces around here pretty quickly.
Yeah. And I mean, one thing I keep thinking of is them putting a roundabout at that intersection of Portage Path and Merriman Road. You know, I generally am not a big fan of roundabouts, but that particular intersection is so annoying to me as it is now that I think that might actually be really nice. To have that kind of get fixed as well. And so the traffic end of things, I think they have there's a lot of potential for how they can fix it and stuff, you know.
I think I read somewhere, correct me if I'm wrong, that traffic circles are safer and they're faster.
I've heard that too. I mean, I still find them annoying
just
as a driver.
Because we're not exposed to a lot of them. We don't drive them a lot.
If you drive them a lot, it would probably get used to them. It wouldn't be a big deal.
Yeah, the more you have, the more facile it is.
They use them in Maryland a lot.
Yeah.
Well, and in the southern part of the county down in Greene, they're in the middle of a project where they put in a ton of them along, I think it's Massillon Road. And that's a divided road now. So, like, you have to, you know, if you want to go to the business on this side of the street, you got to go up to the next roundabout, go around and then come back to get to that business. Which I think for a lot of the people down there, that was super frustrating, but I think it has alleviated some of the traffic issues that they had before. And like you say, it's faster. There's not a traffic light. It's just, you know, it's
You got to watch out for people learning the pathway or the routine for the first time.
Right.
How to merge on a roundabout.
Yep. And they did it at Kent State, too. I remember, like, as I was finishing up working there, they had just put in a whole bunch, a couple of giant roundabouts right there by, like, where the Kent State Student Center and stuff is over that way, like, by the big parking lots and whatnot. So, anyway, lots of interesting stuff happening. Make sure that you go to the city's website, check out the report, take that survey. We'll post a link to that so that you can jump in there and give your opinion. And, yeah, so. In community development, the annual action plan is going to be sent to the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development, and this is how we get community development block grants. You've heard them called CDBG grants, which in previous years have allowed us to provide low-income housing, establish the South State Road Facade Improvement Program, and allow for infrastructure improvements and historic preservation. So that's a good thing. I mean, it's really just part of like a 5-year plan. So it's like something they have to do every year. But it's good to remember that like we have these plans in the city that allow us to do these things like, you know, getting together with like Habitat for Humanity and actually building new houses, but also like fixing existing houses and stuff for low income type family situations. So that's one thing. And then the other thing in the community development, subcommittee, I guess, or committee, is that the city is going to apply for a grant to clean up the old Mud Run Gun Club. They want to spend $373,000 and then the matching grant would be $1.1 million. And then when that's finished, it would become a trailhead along the Mudbrook Trail, which is currently under construction in Ward 5. So if you drive north on, I don't know if you guys know where the Mud Run Gun Club is.
I don't know. I don't know about that.
So if you drive north on, you know, Oakwood, it becomes Wyoga Lake after you cross Graham Road. Before you get to Steele's Corner, it's up that way. It's I think okay. You have to turn left and then you go down and there's like townhouses and like there's actually a new looks like complex of maybe townhouses. The address actually says Stowe if you look it up in a map, but it's apparently Cuyahoga Falls. Anyway, you drive to the end of that little street and there is this big spot where you can tell there used to be something there, but it now just sort of looks like a big parking lot. I think the idea is to make that parking lot into a place where you could drive, park, and then hop out and jump on this new trail that's under construction right now.
That would be pretty cool.
It is gorgeous over there. It's beautiful.
Yeah. And I don't think I've ever, apart from somebody I know who happens to live like on, I think, Yellow Creek, which I think is an offshoot of the Mud Creek maybe, I don't think I've ever even like really been alongside Mud Creek. So, you know, people love hiking and stuff in the city. We've got such a great park system, not to mention the big park just to the north of us here. Like, you know, it's so great to see additional trails coming in and for us to be able to like get out there and enjoy, you know, these great green spaces that we have in our area.
It's always been one of my dreams to when I'm retired to move to a little house in an area like that, where you can live in an area where you're almost pretty much in nature. There's rocks and trees but you know, you don't have a yard. It's nature. I think I've always would be amazing.
Yeah. Steve, not a yard work guy. No. So that would be perfect retirement.
And just nature walk aside and you're in nature and you don't have to take care of the lawn. And
there's wildlife. I mean, for me, I love that same idea. I love that same idea. And it's about the wildlife for me.
That's like the Summit Metro Park's slogan thing though, isn't it? It's like your backyard.
Yeah.
A lot of people live right back there.
That would be amazing. And you're not too thing is you're
just still in the city.
Yes. You're 20 minutes from anywhere.
Yeah.
So and that's what's great about it.
That would be pretty amazing.
The last bit I wanted to discuss here, there's school board news. The planned construction of a new 6-12 campus is developing, and the community was shown the current schematic design at a meeting with Then Design Architecture on January 13th. But there have been some questions about whether components of the project could potentially be removed due to issues with supply chain producing elevated costs. So the interim superintendent Russell Shabity emphasized that no decisions on potential changes would necessarily be made until the project received construction bids in 2023. Funds from the levy passed in 2019 can be used for the school building, planned stadium, auditorium, and other components, but contributions from the Ohio Facilities Construction Commission can only be used for the academic portions of the project, and I think like the cafeteria and stuff too. COVID has increased costs and delayed progress. There's no doubt about it. And as a result, additional income sources have to be considered, as well as assessing different bid strategies and continuing to refine the design to try to meet the budget number. Like they could actually, one thing they talked about is they could actually like do like a lease purchase of the furniture instead of like, you know, just buying it outright.
Lowering the cost up front.
Yeah. And then they've also talked about what they've also done is they have reduced the footprint of the original design to come off of the Bullock site so that it can all be built at the same time. Bullock stays where it is. People can still attend school there. And then they've also increased like how many stories the new school would be in order to reduce costs. So there's a lot of little things that they've tried to do to reduce costs as much as they can. I think one of the things I heard about was like the retention, you know, originally might have been underground, but now they'd actually have above ground pools. And there's a lot of stuff that, you know, probably none of us on this call really understand about construction and construction costs. But
but it seems like they have multiple like routes or methods to try and reduce the budget and still stay within like the
Did you say they would keep Bullock as is and just build a new high school? Is that what you're trying to say?
No, he didn't say that.
Well, they would keep it during construction.
During construction. Oh,
Where initially, you know, the new school would actually be on. So initially what I think was going to happen was there was going to be like they would build the middle school side first. The Bullock students would go from Bullock into the new middle school side, and then the rest of the school would be built, including the auditorium, which would be on the Bullock footprint. Now what they're doing is they're going to make it so that they could actually build the entire school without demolishing Bullock, and then Bullock wouldn't come down until everything was finished. And then keep in mind that the abatement processes for, you know, Newberry and Bullock too have to be part of this, all of this, these costs. And that's also very expensive, as you can imagine, to bring down an entire building and haul away all the, you know, trash and everything. So
I'd like to ask, do you know, since Bullock's not going to come down in this current plan, on that plan, and
coming down.
I know, but at first, so they're going to keep the auditorium and all the stadium stuff intact at the original high school to use while they're still using Bullock?
Yeah, I can't speak to that right now. I don't know.
They haven't decided yet.
I mean, there's a lot of decisions that have to be made. Right now, the concern, I think, in the community is just making sure that, you know, we're still going to get everything that we wanted to get out of the project. But unfortunately, COVID, you know, just delays and supply chain and everything else, increased costs, you know, they have to keep
the whole budget for it and the plans for it originally were pre-COVID, and that changes
exactly.
Everything.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's not, you can't, those numbers aren't good anymore. And, you know, for anyone,
I have a big concern, that China might implode because they've kept their COVID policy at zero tolerance. So nobody's getting COVID. And they don't have any kind of immunity because no one's gotten it. And they've kept the numbers so low that Omicron is unstoppable. And I don't know what Omicron would do to so many hundreds of millions of Chinese people.
All in
a rapid time frame. Like it would probably completely stop the entire Chinese supply chain for a while it spread like fire through everyone. So that, you know, is that going to push things out even farther?
Perhaps.
Because they're still fighting it, right? Timeline is.
That's why they can shut down a city and just like that. Everyone that's
20 million people can't leave.
Can't leave your house.
But but they can't do that with a billion people.
They can certainly try.
Well, I don't think so.
This is this is the Chinese government here.
Yeah, but they would be overwhelmed. I'm just saying that there's a lot of uncertainty in the Chinese supply chain and manufacturing that could happen in the next 6 months, you know, and then we're getting close to 2023 for our school breaking ground or bids, construction bids.
Yeah.
So
and maybe that's one of the reasons
out even more.
Well, maybe that's one of the reasons why Intel wanted to build the largest.
Factory
here because it's stable.
It's stable.
We're stable.
For now. Anyway. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Just a thought about the deadlines and the timelines and the uncertainty.
Well, there's a lot of concerns in the Akron Beacon Journal. I think the same article that appeared in the Akron Beacon Journal appeared in the Falls News Press, so you can look at that article. I think that they do a pretty good job of sort of covering everything, but they also have some of the drawings of the current schematic design in there. So if you haven't seen any of those, you can kind of see the direction things are going. If you haven't seen anything, it's going to be impressive. If you've seen stuff from the beginning, then maybe, you know, it'll just look different. But they continue to talk to the community. There's a planning committee. There's, you know, community meetings. TDA has communications. That's one of their big things, is they're trying to make sure that they're communicating as much as they can about the project to make sure everybody knows what's going on. So, yeah, it's that's where that's at. We're not going to do the Bart's Arch theme song this week because we don't have Suzanne, we don't have Bart, and we don't have
Suzanne's good news.
We don't have Suzanne's good news because Suzanne's not here, and we can't do the Bart's Arch beat without Mike. Steven, you could just say Bart's Arch.
Bart's Arch.
Oh, boring. But thank you for the attempt.
That was the biggest letdown of a Bart's Arch theme song. I think we've ever.
Especially it's my terrible voice.
He needs the warm up from
I gotta feel the beat before it
yeah. can just blast out of him in that guttural, deep, demonic voice.
Yeah. Well, Bart did put in here that the Cuyahoga Valley Arts Center's winter exhibition begins January 25th with their artist reception on February 18th at 5:30 p.m. The subject matter is not strictly winter, but rather a mix of interests and participating artists, and the show runs through March 3rd. And I know there's some other...
I could almost hear Bart's voice just being channeled through you, Alex, as you read that. Very good, very good. I almost feels like he was here.
Yeah. Well, he wrote that. I just read it, so maybe that's what it was.
That's probably why it sounded so good.
Yeah.
Man, Cuyahoga Valley Arts Center, what an institution. Again, we talked about this a couple weeks ago. I remember there was a point where we were worried that they were going to shut down, and then the next thing we knew, they were hiring people, and now they're, you know, they're seem back on track here with another show. So, but please go support local arts. It is so difficult during COVID, the COVID era, for artists of all types,
all genres. Yeah, they're all hurting and just not feeling creative. It's sucking bad. So we got to pump them up.
Well, and it's not just, I mean, I think maybe they are feeling creative, but it's just hard to be able to, like, you know, work in the same way that you could pre-COVID. I mean, especially stuff like live arts, like theater, music, that kind of stuff. It's just, you know, it's tough. Visual art, I mean, I think, you know, it's definitely like, I think a lot of artists are doing okay, like being on Instagram and stuff and getting the word out that way. But as far as like having like a gallery, like Cuyahoga Valley Arts Center, and being able to do a show with the reception and have people come look physically at the actual pieces, that's been difficult. So I'm glad that they're able to do it, and I hope people will go support art everywhere they can. So many great art places in Cuyahoga Falls, Upfront Art Space, you know, Cuyahoga Valley Arts Center, lots of great stuff in the city. And I know Bart is going to have some news in the arts world that's going to be interesting to everybody. I'm here soon too, but I don't think I can say anything about it, and I don't want to steal his thunder. So stay tuned, because arts news will get interesting soon, I think.
Ooh, a cliffhanger. Very good.
Yeah. But
tease our listeners.
Yeah. So Steven, I was at Shelf Life recently, and I saw the big piece that you have there in the lobby of that building.
Yeah.
Now, where did you get that printed? How did you do that? Because it's one photograph.
I didn't print that. That was up front. Unfront did all that.
Yeah, oh. he just sold them his negative.
Yeah, I just sold him the rights to print them.
The digital.
And they picked three images. One of them's there, and then two of them are in the hallway between
Magna
and the candle place.
Hope Soap?
Yes, Hope Soap.
Yeah, there's
two
more.
A big hallway between those two stores. Because there's an upstairs and downstairs, you don't even know it's there. That's the access.
Yeah.
In that hallway, there's two more of my images.
Okay.
One of them is the shot of the Gorge Dam from the Akron side that I use for the paper.
Where you like nearly broke your ankle and like broke one of your camera lenses.
Yeah, smashed. Yes. Yes. Yeah. I think I broke even on that one. Maybe.
Yeah. Yay! Since you got the photography, that's true. Yeah. but it was cool. I really like the way they did it and how his pictures look. Steve is more ambivalent about it.
They didn't spell my name right, you know, but whatever.
I thought you were gonna say anything.
That's very petty.
Yeah.
It's cool, it's all good. And I was honored to have him up
just
there.
Just go in there with a marker and put the accent on the E, right?
I was told him the same thing and he's like, no, don't, but I think I will.
No, they actually think they got the E right. What they messed up was
with his Steven.
Steven.
Instead of PH.
I didn't even notice that.
Which is not a big deal. Whatever.
You know, I'm funny about that too. People send me stuff with a K instead of a C. It's one of those things to where
it's just ask.
I think
it is. It just like that's
it's
not
a,
my,
for me.
I
it's
just
respect.
Feel like
it's respect.
That's not my name.
Yeah, he's not Steven with a V. Malay. Oh well. I thought it's cool.
It was really cool. And if I were doing presenting it myself, I wouldn't have maybe done it that way. So I'm not a fan of Canvas. Not, and it has its place. It looks good like this, but if I was showing my work, I would have printed on something different substrate. That's all. That's my only critique of it. Otherwise, I'm happy to I'm honored to have them up there, and I appreciate the opportunity. And they look cool.
It's almost like a musician like getting like a cover of your song, you know, like to have somebody else print your image for you.
A little bit.
Oh, I don't know, because you've never made a musician song.
No, but I understand where the analogy. Yes.
Yeah. But for you to have the one by Shelf Life is really cool. The way that they kind of broke the image up into multiple little, you know, sized.
Because that was the
canvases.
Stones, right? Stones.
No, that one was.
That's actually like a creek or something, or the river.
No, that's a tight crop of another image that I sent her. And she zoomed in on a one particular area of a much more wide angle shot.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that's she took the section of the Cuyahoga River out of that image, and that's what she blew up.
Oh, gotcha! I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Well, that's right by Shelf Life. If you walk in by Magna Wine, it's right there, in the hallway there, so you can check that out. Again, lots of great art happening in Cuyahoga Falls. Sometimes produced by our very own Stephen Mulay, but lots of good stuff happening in the arts community all the time in Cuyahoga Falls. So get out there, check it out. That's it. We want to thank everybody for joining us this week. We are sorry we don't have an interview for you, check back with us next week. Hopefully we'll have more roundtable participants and an awesome interview for you to check out. If you do have an idea for an interviewee, shout them out to us at fallsfreepress@gmail.com or on social media. And be sure to rate and review us on your podcast catcher if you enjoyed what you heard or not. That's okay. For now, we will say goodbye, and we hope you'll join us next week. And don't forget to get vaccinated. Bye, everybody.
Bye. Stay warm out there.
Later.
Bye.
Fallscast is a production of the Falls Free Press in Cuyahoga Falls, Ohio. Please check out the Falls Free Press at fallsfreepress.com or on social media at facebook.com/fallsfreepress or @falls_free on Twitter or Instagram. We thank you for listening to this episode, which was recorded and edited by Alex Hall. Please subscribe to our podcast and tell your Cuyahoga Falls friends and family so that they can listen as well.